Welcome to a new podcast venture just recently started by me, Jake Morocco, over at Crossing State Lines. That podcast will continue. We're obviously still in episodes of that. But a few months ago, I had the idea to start a new podcast, kind of a side venture, a mini series, so to speak. And what I wanted to do was, it was right around when Pokemon Sword and Shield came out. So I wanted to do something centered on Pokemon, kind of a mini series running down each of the generations. And that's kind of what I decided to do. The problem was I'm not doing that by myself because nobody wants to listen to my voice for just an hour and 15 minutes every week or whatever it is. Nobody wants to hear that. I've never done an episode by myself for longer than 15 minutes for that purpose alone. So what I decided to do was enlist the help of a good friend of mine and a dear, dedicated Pokemon fan. Coming to us from the Small State Big Takes podcast, it is my good friend and Pokemon legend, Pokemon master, Steve Scott. Steve, what's going on?
Jake, what is good? What an awesome intro. I am honored to be here. This is so exciting. Finally, we found, you and I, we were meant to meet because we are two Pokemon masters finally getting the respect that we deserve. I mean, this is it. This is it. This is the podcast for Pokemon lovers, and that's us, man. It doesn't matter how old you are, mid-20s, I don't give a shit. We're Pokemans.
That's right. And we've been playing the game since we were a kid, and or since we were kids, rather, not one collective human being. But
could have been.
That's true. I guess that's possible. But so what we're going to do is we're going to go generation by generation. The first episode, obviously, is Generation 1. You can see that the podcast is called The Elite 2, and we are going to break it down. We might have a guest here and there. Who knows? Maybe somebody pops in, somebody doesn't. I can guarantee you Dave Albiani won't be on here because he doesn't know anything about Pokemon. So I can't blame him though. Dave was in the gym every day, all day as a kid, I bet. Just pumping iron. So I get it. It's all right. It's fine.
Yeah, Dave's been on steroids since he was a child.
Well,
he was training with Jeff Kent.
That was, oh wow. I need to pop a couple allegedlies in there. In case Jeff Kent's people are listening to this podcast, let's throw a ton of allegedlies in there. Except Dave. Dave, we know, took steroids. Anyway.
Dave, cream and the clear.
I would say, Dave, if you're listening, I apologize, but there is no way in hell he is listening to this podcast.
Not a chance.
So, the way we're going to do this, we're going to go, like I said, generation by generation, starting with Generation 1. Obviously, some generations have more games than others. This one's pretty simple, at least in the U.S. There was only red, blue, and yellow. So, we're going to run through some of our favorite memories, our favorite versions, the starters, the gym leaders, the Pokemon, everything that we can pretty much bring to mind and succinctly get out there. So, anyway, Steve, let's just dive right in. Of those three, red, blue, and yellow, what was your favorite one to play?
The one I had, I got the first Pokemon. The first game I ever got was Pokemon Crystal, and I loved it. But then I was like, all my friends had the old games, and I begged my parents, and they actually got me Pokemon Yellow after the fact. And then I realized, I didn't actually realize at the time that one game was older than the other game. I just played the Crystal first, and I watched the show, so I knew that these were newer Pokemon, but I didn't realize, the difference in time. But I had the Yellow game. How about you?
I had Yellow as well. Again, since I was born in either, were you born in 93?
Yeah.
I was born in 94, so we were both just toddlers when these games came out. So yes, the first one I ever played, I believe, was also either Crystal or maybe Silver was the first one I ever played. And then I think my brother had Yellow and Blue. I think, oh man, if I could tap my memory a little deeper, I could probably figure out the exact one. I think Blue was the first one I played. And I replayed Blue a few times after that because I just love the fact that Blue is probably my favorite color. And Blastoise is one of my favorite Pokemon. Spoiler alert. But that was a great game. And I played Yellow too. Yellow, obviously, is a little bit more difficult because you don't have a choice in what Pokemon you start with. And that adds a little bit to the fun or mayhem or just self-loathing for picking up that game. And I guess that can kind of kick off the memory portion of it is that, you literally couldn't beat the first gym leader in Yellow unless you trained another Pokemon. And for most people like me, that was a Butterfree. And that learned Confusion. And you had to, I'm not going to lie, it was a bitch to level up a Caterpie the move was, and you know this, Steve, the move was you get a Metapod, you try to get as high a level as possible, and then you evolve it. The only issue is, if you catch a Metapod, it only knows Harden, so it can't do shit. So you have to do the painstaking method of starting with Pikachu, subbing in Metapod, hoping it doesn't get killed on the first shot, then putting Pikachu back in, or starting with Metapod. Then it was an absolutely infuriating process, but you could not beat the first gym without it.
That's the only way you could do it. That's the only way you could level up a Metapod. I always started with him at the top of the party and then switch him out to Pikachu. And at the time, Pikachu only knew, like, Tackle and, like, Tail Whip.
Yeah, and then if he knew Thundershock, it wasn't going to do anything for you because Rock and Ground types are immune to it. And, yeah, Pikachu's great for Misty, and I guess it helps you against Surge because it really can't do much one way or the other. But you're fucked in the first one against Brock. What are you going to do?
You're deep shit.
You can't get a Rattata, you can't get a Pidgey, you can't level them up. They're not going to obey you or do anything, probably, and it's going to take a long time to level them, and they won't be able to do anything anyway. So you had to get that Butterfree, even though it was part... I can't remember if it was part Flying type or not by that point, but either way, it wasn't a great matchup, but it was your only fucking hope It was your only choice. so I guess building on that, what are some of the initial memories that come to mind when you think of Red, Blue, and Yellow?
The first memory I think of is having the ability to have Pikachu follow you around. That was the coolest shit. I would abuse hitting the A button, like just turn around and have Pikachu jump around. I always wanted him to be jumping. I didn't want him to be like standing there and like the little sound, like whatever he made and like the little face. Yeah, I wanted him to jump up and down like he was pumped up. That was my favorite part of that. But I love that game. Pokemon Yellow. God. Yeah. Also getting like a Charmander, getting a Squirtle. How do you get the Charmander again? I forgot how you got him.
Was Charmander the one? That's a good question. I know Squirtle is from Officer Jenny. Charmander, I can't remember. I'll look it up.
Like the Freedom Road or whatever there, or not that Freedom Road, like that bridge.
The bicycle road? You're right. Charmander was off of the Nugget Bridge.
Yeah, no, there you go.
You're right. That was when Charmander. Do you say Bulbasaur? Because I forgot how you get Bulbasaur.
Where's Bulbasaur from?
Bulbasaur, I can't remember. Yeah, I know the only one I remember distinctly where you get it is Squirtle. You get it from Officer Jenny after the break into the house, and you have to have like a certain amount of Pokemon or be up to a certain level or some shit like that. So it's not like you don't just go say hi and she gives you a Squirtle. You have to like actually work for it, which kind of sucks, but. Or maybe I'm conflating that with Let's Go, but anyway, that doesn't matter. It's still a
Let's
bit.
Let's Go. That was that game was ridiculous.
Let's Go was Let's Go was a bit of a bitch. We'll get to that in many episodes, but that game was I didn't know what to expect, and when I got that expectation, I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll have to make this work, especially since like you can't battle wild. That's a discussion for a different time. So anyway. Steve, let's move on to the discussion that has dominated conversations about Generation 1, especially really every generation, but I feel like Generation 1 is the one that people really harp on for this question. Who's the best starter? Not counting Pikachu.
Yeah. This is the toughest question of all time as regards to any Pokemon thing, in my opinion. Mm. I have done both. Squirtle and Charmander in my life. Never Bulbasaur. I've never started with Bulbasaur in my life.
Yep.
If you put a gun to my head and made me choose one, I don't know why you'd do that. That'd be ridiculous, but I would say Squirtle. I think Squirtle's my boy.
Squirtle was the move, and the reason why Squirtle was the move for me was that, and it was all about strategy, because it's very tough to game plan in Generation 1 because there's not a giant amount of moves. And it's when you get to like generation 5 and 6 and there's like 4,000 moves, it's a lot easier, but you don't really can kind of work around. I think I started with the grass type in generation 6, maybe in Sun and Moon, but that was a far cry from now when Blastoise was the move every time, because once you got to that dragon type in the Elite Four, first of all, Venusaur wasn't going to do your shit anyway. Second of all, I mean, you wouldn't even get past Lorelei with Venusaur, so get the fuck out of here. And then... So you have Charizard, you can get past the ice types and all that stuff, but fire is not that effective against dragon, flying is okay, decent move, so it really wasn't going to work out in your favor, but if you had Blastoise, you had those ice moves, those sweet, sweet ice moves, and those were so dominant and so effective, and that's why Squirtle was the move every time. And Squirtle was very easy to beat the first gym leader with, even if it was touch and go for the next like three, because you had the water on water, the water on electric, and the water on grass, and all three of those is just an absolute gauntlet after you start off with rock. But Squirtle was always the move for me, even if it was tough, because Charmander is a close second, because Charizard is such a badass. I mean, it's still one of the most recognizable Pokemon. After Pikachu, you could probably argue it's the most recognizable one.
I think you're right. Charizard's always coming back in the show. Charizard's like the most badass dragon fucking fire Pokemon there is still.
Yeah.
I think they've tried to make other badass Pokemon, but like Charizard still holds the fucking badass torch, in my opinion.
Oh, for real. I mean, just look at the you play Sword and Shield?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just look at that game. Charizard was a big part of that game, and it's like Generation 8. So, right. And I don't even think, either Squirtle or Bulbasaur, one of the two aren't even in Sword and Shield. Like, you can't even get them in Sword and Shield. So it just goes to show you. Just goes to show you how important Charizard is to the franchise. Outside of Pikachu, I think, like we said, it's probably the most recognizable Pokemon in them all. Especially with the if you have one of those holofoil Charizard cards, you can make a windfall off one of those. Let me tell you.
Yo, in fifth grade, I actually stole a kid's Charizard card. I asked him to borrow it, and I just fucking stole it. Never gave it back.
Wow.
Immediately. So my intention was to steal it. I bring it home.
Right.
Don't know where I put it.
Right.
Never saw it again.
Okay. Well, I mean, that makes sense. You were probably young, so, like, you don't really... You just kind of do stuff, and then you put it down. And you're like, all right, well, I know where I put that, but whatever. Whatever. Right. I'll find something else. But, yeah,
time went on.
Those cards, man, those were, like, the coolest-looking cards in them all. So that might be how people really recognize Charizard to this day. But before we move on, we can't not address Bulbasaur. I mean Bulbasaur is cute, all due respect to Bulbasaur, but Venusaur is maybe one of the worst full evolution starters ever.
So ugly.
Not only that, I mean it's slow. It really has a pretty small moveset overall. I mean, the thing about Venusaur is that when you're a kid, Venusaur probably requires the most strategy to be good with that starter. Right. And when you're 7, 8 years old, you don't give a shit about strategy. You just want to win. And the easiest ones to win with were either the cool-looking dragon or the badass turtle. And you didn't want the slow dinosaur plant tree because it didn't do shit for you. And yes, it was effective against the first couple of gym leaders, and even against Lieutenant Surge, it was pretty effective because electric and grass don't really go together well move-wise, but I mean it's a rough go with Venusaur, especially once you get to the stronger Pokemon. So Bulbasaur, I really don't think I've ever encountered somebody who's team Bulbasaur in this debate, but I don't think I want to.
I know someone that is.
I don't know.
He should have been here tonight.
Is it? You're kidding me.
Yep.
Oliver is a Bulbasaur guy?
Oliver's a Bulbasaur
guy. I need to hear the explanation for this at some point. Like,
that's why you should be here for this. He's a full blown Bulbasaur guy.
That would have been, talk about embrace debate. That would have been something, because I just don't understand. I mean, I give him credit for taking the hard route and trying to win with Bulbasaur, but at the same time, I don't understand it, because Bulbasaur can learn pretty much grass, poison. Maybe you can learn earthquake, which would be effective, but outside of that, I really can't learn all that much. So you're really pigeonholing yourself when it comes to picking a starter. I mean, unless you're like me and you just OP your starter and to the point where they can't lose to anybody, because you know that was just what I did.
Always.
I mean, you got to catch them all, but you can only catch them all if you have the strong ass Pokemon. So you know that was the move I made.
Yeah, you walk into a gym that's like all level 30s and you're a level 50 with a freaking Blastoise. You just got to do what you got to do sometimes, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And we'll get to that a little bit later in terms of where I think kind of the demarcation line of OP is in the game, where you can really overpower your Pokemon. But let's move on to the gym leaders here.
Okay.
So the gym leaders, there's obviously 8 of them, as is the case with like the first 6 generations until they mixed it up about 4 or 5 years ago. So the 8 we have in order, you have Brock, Misty, Surge, Erica, Koga, Sabrina, Blaine, and Giovanni. I almost said Cinnabar. That's not the name of the man. That is the island he lives on. But, yeah, so for you, who was the hardest and who was the easiest in the game?
All right, the hardest for sure growing up was Surge.
Yeah, I agree.
Did not know how to get past him at the time. Like, I knew, like, I don't know what my problem was. I remember waiting out in that gym at least 4 or 5 times, and I didn't. So I'd go in that little, like, past the Surge's area where all those drowsies were and all that stuff.
Yep.
I'd go down there and train. But yeah, that was the toughest. Surge was tough.
Surge wasn't, he wasn't only tough because he had tough Pokemon, which he did, but that gym was a bitch to get through.
Oh, the trash cans and stuff?
Oh my god, dude. That was no fun. No fun.
How were you supposed to know that back then, too? There's no walkthroughs?
Yeah, dude, it's like 1999 or 2000. I'm sure there's some message board, but there's no 8-year-old kid looking at a message board in 1998 or whatever it is, 97, 98. It's you're on your own, and you gotta just find one. And they reset every time. You can't even walk through it. You just have to take a leap of faith. It's pure luck.
That's right.
It's taken me so long to get to that fucking gym, and honestly, I forgot about that. And I wrote Surge as my most difficult. Didn't even think about that, and how that gym was so much of a task. And it's not even like I remember I got to a point where. When I would replay the game, I would just battle the trainers, make a point to go after them first, and then do the trash cans, because that was the hard part.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm all set with this. I'm not messing around with those. I'll just battle the trainers. I'll take them all out. They're easy. They have a bunch of Voltorbs. I'll just mess them up. Yeah. And then you move on. You do the trash cans. They take you like 20 minutes. And then somehow you face Surge. And oh, by the way, Surge is very tough because he has a Raichu. So have fun with that.
That's true.
It's tough. It's tough to beat Surge. After him, though, I had Erica, and that was mostly because I start with a water type. And even if you get strong, I mean, one of the most, to this day, Steve Scott, one of the most infuriating moves in Pokemon is Giga Drain. And every time a fucking grass type uses it against me when I have a water type, I'm like, what a cop-out, because it's going to take away so much of my hit points. And I have to deal with this and still try to take you out when it's hard enough for a water type to take down a grass type, even if the ice thing gives them the advantage. It still sucks, and I hate that move so much. And I think she only has Mega Drain at the gym. I don't think she has Giga Drain by that point, but I just hate it, and I hate facing off against Erica. It's also a bitch to get to her. They have to fight so many trainers, and there's like a maze you have to get through, and a lot of cutting is involved, so you have to make sure you have an HM mule with you to do it. Yep. So... Oh my god, dude, it was so tough. But I don't know who are you kind of like your top three toughest?
Well, you know what? Giga Drain. I'm just thinking about that. That gave me that's like a nightmare move against you. That's a tough one. Top move, top gym. That's most hard. I'm thinking of I don't remember the guy's name, but the one with the glasses, the old man.
Oh, that Blaine, the fire guy.
Fire guy, yeah.
Yeah, the fire guy. I actually put him as my easiest just because I would always start out with water types. And his gym was so easy to get through because all you had to do was answer a bunch of trivia questions.
That's right. That's the problem. I remember the gym. I don't remember. And I didn't remember that he's a fire guy.
No, yeah, but
he was easy.
He was, I mean, he was only easy if you had. I mean, again, my rankings only depend on, because I kind of think about the starter I had. So if I had Squirtle, it's obviously easier to get past Blaine. If you had Venusaur, you're probably putting Blaine at the top of the list because by that point, there's so much... I mean, he has like an Arcanine, and good luck with a Venusaur against an Arcanine. Again, you know, people who play this game for strategy tend to train a whole team, but I'm not one of those people, so I don't give a shit. Brock, Sabrina, Misty, they really weren't that hard for me. Sabrina was actually surprisingly easy, but then again, you had to go through the Sylph building before it, and you battle like 50 different Rocket members. So it kind of, like, levels you up. I put Koga on my list, the poison guy, the ninja.
Yep.
He's only on my list because, again, his gym, very annoying. Very annoying.
How'd that go? That was, like, the big blank one?
Yeah, that was the one. It was, like, invisible walls, and there were ninjas hiding in the ground. They would pop up and battle you. And, like, if you angled the screen the right way, you could, like, kind of see where the walls were. You'd have to, like, hold it up to, like, candle fire and, like, look and see where the walls were. And then you could kind of see where the trainers were. But, I mean,
it was tough.
It was inventive enough, but...
Yeah.
It also was, like, again, there's, an 8-year-old kid playing this fucking game. Like, can you give him a break?
Know your audience, you know?
Not to mention, there's, like, a 25-year-old kid playing this game. Can you give me a break?
Still? Like, honestly... Come on. I don't have time for this.
But yeah, I mean, I thought the gym leaders were pretty good. I mean, I like the concept of going through all the gyms and kind of, it's definitely an interesting concept. I thought Giovanni at the end, I know it's supposed to be a twist, and I'm sure the first time you see it, it's like, oh my God, he's a gym leader. But at the same time, right. You're like, well, I mean, this motherfucker is easy to take down no matter what Pokemon you have, really. I mean, anybody can take him down. But it's an interesting enough twist. But before we move on, we have to talk about the namesake of this podcast, the Elite Four. And you face off against, I'm doing this from memory, it's yep. Ice, Fighting, Ghost, and then Dragon, I believe, are the four.
Wow.
I think it's Lorelei, Bruno, Agatha, and Lance are the four you face off against.
That might Lance.
Yeah, Lance was the real deal. Lance, because that was when they throw you for a loop that you think Lance is like he's the final one, and obviously that act gets really old by like the second time they do it. But yeah. When you think you're at the end and then all of a sudden you have to battle your rival, like that's pretty cool. But the Elite Four, I don't remember who I struggled with the most in the Elite Four. I think it was the ice type and then maybe the fighting type. Those were always kind of hard to get around, but I feel like I did well with the ghosts and the dragon types. I mean, I built my whole fucking team for the dragon type, so I better do well against it.
Yeah. Yeah, the dragon type, yeah, you can always take them down, but the ice type, always, in every game, I had trouble with. Like, I'm thinking back to, like, Ruby era, and that was, you know, for a different podcast, but still, that I had a tough time with them every time I got shreked by them. Shrek. Ghost, I always have a problem with Ghost, too.
Ghost, especially, I mean, Generation 1, it was interesting because they made somebody who was in the Elite Four with Ghost types when there really weren't a lot of Ghost types in the first generation.
Right, it's kind of like Ghost Poison.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there was Ghastly, there was Haunter, there was Gengar, and I don't think, were there even, I think that was it, right?
I think there's an Ekans in there, or what's the big one?
I think they were just poison type. Let me check. Ghost type. This is incredible radio. I understand that.
Oh yeah, let's go.
Let's see here. Come on, I just want a list. God, all I want is a list.
Arbok.
Yeah, that's. I think that's just a point. Oh, okay. I guess. Yeah, in Generation 1, there's only three ghost types, and it was Ghastly, Haunter, and Gengar, and they were all dual type with poison. So yeah, it's weird that they had somebody in the Elite Four with just those three. I think she had like three Haunters and two Gengars, and that was it. Not a lot of diversity in that lineup. But yeah, again, this is for a different podcast. But you've played all the games, right?
Yes. Oh no, I haven't played all the games. I played Generation 1, 2, 3. I played a little bit of Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
Did not play X and Y. Then I had Moon, and then I had the last one.
So you've pretty much played everything but X and Y then?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
I don't know if I missed any.
You played Black and White?
Black and White? No, I did not.
Okay. Well, that's, don't worry. That will be a short podcast because there's really not a lot to talk about in Black and White. I think it's the worst game in the franchise. But anyway.
I actually skipped over it because I thought it was. I was like looking at the previews when it was coming out, and I was like, nah.
Yeah, I mean, I played it. I think I played it retroactively just because I wanted to play every game in the series. And if I can find it, you're more than welcome to borrow it. But I had to find it first. It's, and honestly, you can probably find it for like $10 at GameStop now because who the fuck really wants one of those? But it's not good, and we'll get to that later on. But it's not. Hey, but anyway,
yo, real quick. Yeah. I just looked up Agatha's who she had.
Yeah,
she had two Gengars. A Golbat, a Haunter, and an Arbok.
That's right. Arbok. Good call. I forgot she had a Golbat. That's right. I forgot they don't necessarily have to have their primary type for every one of them. Yeah, we'll get to Golbat later in the most overrated category, but I hated Golbat so much. I still hate Golbat. Every time I run into one of those bats in the cave, and I'm like they just haven't figured out to get rid of these fucking things yet. And honestly, I just can't stand them. But yeah, Agatha, she was something. But anyway, what I wanted to say was, I think it's in, oh man, I can't remember what generation it is. It might be Pearl, it might be X and Y. I can't remember what it is, but do you remember Spiritomb? Was a ghost type.
Let me see. How do you spell it?
Spirit, O-M-B.
Okay. Let me see. No, I don't.
So Spiritomb was a special type of Pokemon because in the first generation it came through, it, you could only obtain it by, like, going up to a rock and, like, doing some sort of stuff. And, but then in later, I think it was when Alpha Sapphire came out, you could actually obtain it in, like, a much easier way. So that was nice. But Spiritomb was very hard to defeat because it was a ghost dark type. So if you think of all the weaknesses of a ghost type, until Fairy came along, there really was nothing super effective against a Spiritomb. So it was always very difficult to beat it. But that's neither here nor there. We can get to that once Spiritomb enters the Pokedex, enters the chat. But so kind of just running through some general game walkthrough stuff, just kind of running down some of my favorite parts. This is what I said in the direct message when I pretty much introduced this idea to you guys. They let us gamble in Generation 1.
They did.
They let us gamble. Like, they let kids gamble. And it was like, it wasn't like a, oh, do you want to bet 5 coins on this Pokemon coming up on the screen? It was like slot machines.
Legit, and you could win, like, Pokemon. You could win actual, like, Abras.
Yeah.
Or, I can't think of anything else, but Abra was available.
Oh, the big get was a Porygon. You could win. That was the only place you could get a Porygon.
That's right. And it was like, insane to get one. Like, but how many coins did you need to get a Porygon?
Don't quote me. I'll look it up. Don't quote me on it. I think it was like 10,000, honestly. But the best part about Generation 1, and it sucked because they got rid of it in subsequent generations, you could buy coins. So you could literally just buy yourself a Porygon. I think the ones they sold were Abra, Clefairy, I want to say Mr. Mime, and then Porygon was obviously the big get because you couldn't get it anywhere else.
That's right.
Let me see if I look up Porygon cost. I wonder if that will bring me to the Porygon cost. Let's see. Wow, it actually does bring it to it. In Pokemon Blue, Porygon costs 8,300 coins. It's down to 6,500 in Leaf Green, which is good. And then in Pokemon Crystal, you can get it for the cheap price of 5,555 coins.
Wow.
I mean, that's a discount. I guess they were just trying to get rid of the Porygon at that point.
What the hell is a Porygon anyway? What type is that?
It was a normal type, and it was like some sort of like failed computer experiment or something like that, and then it just produced this Pokemon. And Porygon is probably best known for, I'm sure you've read the episode that they pulled from circulation in Japan because it was giving people seizures. There was an episode where it was giving so many people seizures, they had to not only pull it, but they had to, like, reissue it with a warning saying, you know, there's a lot of bright lights, strobe lights. If you have, you know, epilepsy or some sort of condition, you should not watch this episode. And I've never seen the scene, but I've seen it, like, out of the corner of my eye just because I wanted to get a look. And I understand why people had seizures, because it was intense. So
flashing.
A lot of flashing light. There's, like, a scene where, like, Porygon's doing something, like, I don't know, going crazy or doing conversion or whatever its move is. And it, like, is very intense flashing. And I can understand why plenty of people got seizures from it. That's not the... I mean, Generation 1 has some real cursed shit. Like, Lavender Town. I'm sure you've seen the theories about Lavender Town.
What was that?
Some really sinister stuff. Like, the music was, like really, like giving people depression and stuff. And, like, they had to change it. And it's...
that's right.
It's... there's some really... like, there was a lot of stuff to work out in Generation 1 because it was messed up. But Lavender Town, I'm not going to lie, Lavender Town and the Radio Tower? What was the name of that building? Do you remember? No, it wasn't a Radio Tower. It was like a, it wasn't called a graveyard, but it was like, no, Pokemon Tower. That's what it was. It was Pokemon Tower. And it was like Pokemon graves and what's the word I'm looking for? Like mystics and shit and like, saying, like, oh, I can conjure this Pokemon, and, like, you run into a ghost that's Cubone's dead mother, and you're an 8-year-old kid playing this game, and you're like, what the hell is happening in this game? It is legitimately scary stuff. Like, and not to mention the music is actually kind of terrifying.
It legitimately was scary. At the time, I remember getting in that town, and the town's kind of small in the game, you know? It's like, what, 2 houses in a... and then a Pokemon Center.
Yeah.
You have to go to like a little path, and then it's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in there, and it's that music's playing, and you're like, oh, man. And then there's ghosts, and people are like grieving their dead Pokemon. And at the time, as a child, too, I was not fully aware yet if Pokemon could die or not.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, then you find that out. It's like, wow, there's a cemetery, there's graves. So I have a question for you, actually.
Yeah.
Some Pokemon must have different lifespans than others, or life expectancies. So what Pokemon do you think would have the longest life expectancy?
That's a really good question. You know, my gut instinct says, like, a Snorlax, but, like, that thing definitely doesn't live very long because it lives, like, the worst lifestyle ever. I'm gonna say, Legends excluded, obviously. I'm gonna say, like, a Gyarados, maybe. I feel like it's kind of the top of the food chain. Not much is gonna probably take that thing down. It's living in the ocean. There really aren't many more strong, like, not stronger Pokemon than a Gyarados in the ocean, so I'm gonna say Gyarados. I'm gonna give it a long lifespan. Or Lapras.
Lapras live, yeah, for sure. Lapras, yeah, any water Pokemon that's like has a big shell or is a big dominator of the ocean like that. I bet you Blastoise would live a while.
Mm.
How long do you think they would live? How long would a Blastoise live?
I'm gonna give Blastoise like 150 years.
Okay, like a big ass turtle.
I'm gonna give Lapras like 200, flat, easy.
Gyarados, how much?
Well, if I said Gyarados was longer than Lapras, I'm gonna give it like 215. That thing is a beast. I mean, honestly, like that thing can keep going for centuries, no doubt about it.
I'll say 1,000 for Gyarados because you know what, Loch Ness monster style. That thing just living forever in the.
Well, Steve, your show is about big takes, and that is a hell of a big take. 1,000 years. That's 1,000 years. That's pretty good. I like it though. I like it. I like the dedication. What else do I have in this list here? Moving on to, just one other quick note. The SS Anne, that was what I was talking about when I mentioned the demarcation line between whether you want to train a team or you just want to overpower your starter. Because you go on the SS Anne, there's like 15 trainers, and you face off against them all before you go to Lieutenant Surge because you have to get cut, and you have to go back to Lieutenant Surge, you have to cut down the tree, go in the gym, but you get all this training beforehand. So that's really the point where you know, do I want to overpower my starter, or do I want to kind of train a team here and do it the hard way? And spoiler alert, I never chose the hard way. I always overpowered my my Wartortle at that point.
Always.
Always. It was the move.
Got to overpower,
that was the move.
Yeah.
That was the move. It was the move. There was no other move.
Was it you that told me about the St. Anne's thing about you battle your rival in St. Anne's on the ship, and then your rival's Raticate dies.
No, you were telling me that. You sent me that theory. You sent me that like list of theories you found, and then it was that like your rival's Raticate dies, and that was the theories. You're the villain of the game.
Right, that's what it was.
Yeah. So
you killed your friend's Raticate.
As if this game wasn't sinister enough, that shit is. I mean, and then there's also the whole Clefable Gengar theory that Gengar is Clefable's shadow. A lot of dark stuff in the first generation of Pokemon. Thank God they brightened it up literally and figuratively in future generations. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about legends, Steve. There's legends in every one of these generations. And there are some of the best in Generation 1. So let's start with the birds. You have the three legendary birds, Articuno, Zapdos, and Moltres. Did you have a favorite? And which one of these was the hardest to catch in your opinion?
My favorite was Articuno, for sure. I think that's like the coolest. I think that's one of the coolest looking Pokemon ever. And like, I wish it was real. I wish Articunos were real. That's my big take. I think the hardest one for me to catch was, I think it was Zapdos, because he was in that power thing. He was in that power.
Yeah, he was in the power plant. Yeah.
I don't know why I had a hard time with him, but I had a hard time like finally getting to him in that power station thing.
Yeah, that was pretty hard. I would say the hardest one for me was Articuno, just because Articuno was the hardest one to get to, in my opinion. Yeah. I would actually say, I mean, they were all very hard to get to, now that you mentioned it. Moltres was in Victory Road, as if Victory Road wasn't tough enough. Then
that's right.
You can go find Moltres there. And I always found Articuno, was the hardest one to catch, and I'm not sure why. Zapdos was also pretty wily. Moltres, for whatever reason, was the easiest for me to catch. I don't know what it was. And it was always tough because I'm sure, you know what I mean when I say, you always save the game right before you fight him. Because if you knock out that bird, you're fucked. You're not getting the bird back. So, or maybe you are, but it's not till like a later date or something like that. But And there's no clock in Generation 1, so I'm not sure how that works out, but you better save that game.
Right. Yeah. I always that's a big thing. We should do like a thing that every Pokemon player knows to do.
Oh,
That's one for sure.
We'll do What's the Move. That's the segment. What's the Move? What's the move? You save before you fight Legends. Always save before you fight Legends.
Always. Right. And I always did it like right, like the step before him, like little icons right there. I put my guy right in front of him, save it. Then like sometimes I'd mess it up.
Yeah.
Like I'd kill him. I'd make him faint. Oh no, turn it right off immediately.
Yep. The Elite Two's commandments. We'll start that list up. And that first one is the move is you always save before you battle Legends, kids. Always save before you battle Legends. My favorite, though, is probably Zapdos, because it looked cool, and having an electric-type bird on my team was always helpful going up against stronger trainers. So Zapdos is always my favorite, personally.
An electric bird. Imagine that. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah, do you remember the posters that came out last year for the new Godzilla movie at the time? Did you see those?
No, I don't know.
Because I'll have to go find my tweet about it. But the posters looked like they were posters for the three legendary birds of Pokemon. It was pretty crazy, actually. It looked pretty legit.
I like to see it. I saw the new the DLC for this new game coming out.
For
Shield and stuff. Mm-hmm. They had like the new art for them.
Yeah.
For the old legendaries. That's cool.
They have regional variant legendaries, which is wild. That's like something they've never done before, so I'm looking forward to that. They can just take my money. But obviously the big one, or the big two, even though you really couldn't catch one in the game, were Mewtwo and Mew. And I personally never had a Mew. I never found one, never knew how to catch it, never knew how to generate one. Mewtwo obviously is the kind of the crowning achievement of the game. It is what you save the Master Ball for, usually, unless you're an amateur like I used to be at the game, and I would use it on, like, Zapdos or some shit, and then forget ever catching Mewtwo, because that thing's not getting inside an Ultra Ball, so have fun with that. There's another move, another commandment to throw on the list. You save the Master Ball for Mewtwo. You don't waste it on a legendary bird or anything else, for that matter. Use it on Mewtwo. That's the move, kids.
Big take. I don't recall catching Mewtwo.
It is like the last thing you can do in the game, because after you beat the champion is when you get access to Cerulean Cave, and that's where Mewtwo is. So you have to you also have to work your way through Cerulean Cave, which is also kind of a scary place to get through because there's a bunch of really strong Pokemon there, and that's why it's sealed off until you beat the champion and become the champion. And there's like Kadabras and like Machokes and all these Pokemon that are like level 60, so it's tough. And then you get to Mewtwo and it's like level 70. So, the only thing that sucks, though, is that, like, once you get to Mewtwo, it's not like you can use him to beat the champion. Like, that's it. Like, you have Mewtwo, but, like, what do you do with it?
Yeah, cool.
Pokemon fun.
Mewtwo guy, yeah.
Great. I mean, you got Mewtwo. It helps to complete the Pokedex. But did you ever encounter a Mew? Because I never saw a Mew in my life.
Never did.
No, me neither. I just saw... Yeah.
There's some videos on YouTube of people, like, glitching the game so a Mew would appear.
Mm. And a missing now, too. People see a missing now.
Hell yeah.
Missing No, man, the glitch. There's so much information on Missing No that I can't go into all of it on the podcast, but a great glitch. One of the all-time handheld game glitches is Missing No. I guess it's Missing Number, technically, but it's just Missing No when you look
at it.
It's Missing No.
That was, like, big on YouTube, too, but, like for me, early on in YouTube days, yep. I'd be watching videos about Missing No all the time.
Oh, for
come
sure.
Come in and glitch the game for you. Oh, yeah.
All right, Steve, so I got my most overrated Pokemon. I got five of them right here.
Five. Oh my god. Okay.
Five of them. All right. These are all kind of just like off the top, like not listed one through five, but five overrated Pokemon for me. I got Fearow on this list.
He's on mine too.
Get out of my face. Just get out of my face. I don't need Fearow. Fearow is like the inferior Pidgeot. I don't need Fearow. Fearow's annoying. Fearow almost killed Pikachu, if we don't remember that in the show. So
first episode.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Tentacruel. Never really that strong of a Pokemon, honestly. Wasn't that strong. It was... It always postured like it was strong, but it was never really useful.
I agree. He looked cool. I bet you'd be scary if you were freaking in the ocean and you saw one, but...
I will give Tentacruel credit. It was great in the opening sequence of the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's all I got for Tentacruel.
He was huge in the... Like, he was... Slammed the building with his freaking thing.
Yeah, it was enormous. It was right when the drums would crash too, and he would just bam right into that building. I think we discussed this one already when you were watching the movie the other night, but Wigglytuff, not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Pointless Pokemon, actually.
Really is, and I think I said it the other night, but I wrote it down also. It's pretty much off-brand Clefable.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it is. And it's, like, less useful and less cool and can do fewer things, so not a fan.
You would think that a Wigglytuff would have the same, like, powers as a
yeah.
Clefable, too, but it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It's really just not. It's also slower, so there's that, at least to my knowledge. These next two, they might surprise you. I know the last one's probably going to surprise you. This one is Victory Bell.
Okay.
I've tried to incorporate a Victory Bell into my team so many times across so many games, and it has failed every single time. Because Victory Bell, I think its defensive stats are shit. It's very slow, and it can't learn a lot of moves. It can learn grass and poison and has a lot of, you know, like special moves and stuff and status moves, but unfortunately, like, status moves only get you so far. If you're playing at Battle Tower or some shit, battle moves aren't going to get you that far. So I tried, and Victory Bell just kind of sucks. So That's it. And I wrote, this might be kind of a nuclear take, but I put Pinsir on my list.
Why?
Because Pinsir was so damn hard to catch in this game.
Yeah.
And its type combo is so not complementary to winning in the game. It's bug and fighting. And that is a terrible combination. And while it learns cool moves and while it really is just more of like a status symbol. And that's what a lot of Pokemon in the Safari Zone are like Tauros and Pinsir. And I think Chansey is in the Safari Zone too. There's a lot of like unique ones and you know that, but like Pinsir was always the one like, oh, and don't even get me started on the Safari Zone because all those Pokemon would run away the second you throw a Pokeball at them and you have to like feed them and shit. And I'm just so not about that life. Oh, that's so stupid. And I love these games, but, like, that was such a tedious part. Again, these are kids playing the game. Like, you have to feed the Pokemon, make sure it doesn't run away, then throw... it's hard enough catching it as it is. And then, also, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but actually it didn't make my list. One of my other favorite Pokemon is Kangaskhan. I only could find it in the Safari Zone. So, that sucked. Yeah. Could never find it. It's always hard to find a Kangaskhan in any of these fucking games. So, those are my most overrated. Do you have any others?
Yes, I have one. I never liked Parasect. Thought that was a weird ass Pokemon.
Yeah,
I don't like mushrooms like that. It's kind of scary.
No, I don't like it either. And I mean, Generation 1, other than Beedrill, I really didn't like any of the bug types. And again, they weren't really that effective because all you had to do was use like Flamethrower once, and they would be gone. Like that's it.
No matter what, yeah.
Yeah, they just weren't that effective, and that's why. I can't believe they used a bug-type gym leader in the second generation, but don't worry. We'll give Bugsy his due. all right, so then the last thing we got to do is build your ideal six Pokemon lineup with Pokemon solely from this generation, and obviously Legends are exempt. So your six Pokemon lineup, we can go back and forth here. I'm going to start off easy off the top, Blastoise. And this isn't a draft, so you can have similar Pokemon. So Blastoise, easy off the top. Teach it Ice Beam, change your life. That's my first pick.
All right, I'll also go with Blastoise here because that's what I went with back in the day. He'd be my guy. No matter what, he would never leave my party. Always, right. Like, these guys that never leave my party, he'd be one of them.
Oh, yeah. Blastoise faints, I'm like, oh, shit. I hope I can get a revive out quick enough because no one else is beaten whatever I'm playing.
Exactly.
Arcanine's my second pick. It's probably Moltres, but it's a legend. It's probably the strongest fire Pokemon in the game, up there with Charizard. Really, really fast, too, which is complimentary to Blastoise not being all that fast, which is one of the probably the only downfall of Blastoise. It's kind of slow. But, yeah, I got to go with Arcanine. It's just blazing fast. It can take out really any grass type before it gets a chance to make a move.
That's a good one. My fire guy, I always had an Arcanine, and I had a Growlithe Arcanine. But I never, like, level them up to the point where they'd be my main fire guy. But I would use, like, a Ninetales. Ninetales had the flamethrower going on, too. I don't know how fast they were. But, you know, did the job. So I'd go with the Ninetales.
Yeah, I get that. I get that for sure. Next up is, I got Alakazam. Really strong special moves. And it had that allure of being a Pokemon you can only get via trade, which was even cooler. It's like, oh, you have an Alakazam, or you have a Machamp, or a Gengar. Wow, dude, or a Golem. Oh, man, like, you, A, must have a friend, or B, have the money enough to buy another Game Boy, and you can do it yourself. So that was in my college days. I bought another DS and was trading Pokemon back and forth with myself. It was a wild time. While other people were out partying in dorms, I was sitting in my bed trading Haunter and Graveler back and forth. Yeah, that was a real wild time. What's your third pick?
I feel you with that too, by the way. My sister had a Game Boy back in the day. I used to steal it from her and do similar things with the Link cable.
Oh yeah, well, Link cable. That was the move right there.
Was the move.
You go over to your boys. You got the Link cable. I got the Link cable.
Oh, you're a legend.
Oh yeah. You got the Game Freak. Ooh.
Oh.
You were invited to all the parties if you had the Game Freak.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. All right, what do you got?
All right, I got a good one for you. This Pokemon never left my, because I matched you with Ninetales because I was a fire Pokemon kind of thing.
Mm.
But this Pokemon never left my party from day one. This is a thing that I would do in every generation. I would go out and catch the first bird Pokemon in the game, even if I didn't know like what that bird was. But obviously I knew what a Pidgey was. So Pidgeot, by the end, I always had a Pidgeot that was like level 70, no matter what, that I started with my day one. And I always imagined my starter and my Pidgey were just bros for life. That was like my thought process as a child.
That is actually very sweet. I'm not going to lie. You had a little friend for your starter Pokemon.
Yeah.
I traded their friends in and out like nothing. So that's very reassuring to hear somebody didn't do that. All right, next up for me is, I think, one of the most underrated Pokemon in the game, and that's Muk. And that's because if you played your cards right, Muk was really hard to take down, because if you compounded that Minimize with Toxic and like another decent, like a Sludge Bomb or something, Muk was hard, because then its evasiveness was all the way up, and then you could poison the opponent. It's not hitting you. It's getting damage done to it by poison. And then there was no steel type in first generation, so it wasn't anything immune to poison at that point. And then if you have like a Sludge Bomb or like some other move, you can do the damage that way too. I thought Muk was, that was what made Koga so hard to beat, because Muk would just minimize, and then you can't hit it unless you, and I don't think generation one had, maybe except for Swift, it didn't have any moves that were guaranteed to hit. So unless you knew Swift, you were pretty much screwed. So that's why
Swift never misses.
Never misses. Muk was the move, man. Muk was the move.
I got one for you.
No, I'm ready.
I always evolved my Eevee to be a Jolteon.
It's a good move. I almost had Jolteon was one of my last cuts, I'm not gonna lie.
No way.
I love Jolteon. I mean, I always had a soft spot for Vaporeon because I like water types, but Jolteon, again, I mean, it's fast, it's electric type, it's easy to get because all you have to do is evolve Eevee. So yeah, Jolteon's a good move.
Pretty funny how there was no grass version of Eevee at the time.
No, I mean, now there's every single type version of Eevee you could ever want and ever imagine.
So cool.
Every one of them, even fairy type, got one when it got debuted in Sylveon. But don't worry, there's an evolution in like every generation, so we'll get to them eventually. Next up for me, fifth in my lineup, is Gengar, one of my personal favorites. There's not a lot of ghost types like we discussed in the game. There's only three in the first generation. And Gengar is just, you know, it's a fun one to use. Yeah, it's poison type, so it makes it susceptible to more moves than, you know, like it could be susceptible to like ground type or psychic type is pretty effective on it. So it could be, you know, it has some holes in it, but I think it's pretty effective Pokemon, has pretty decent moveset. And I've always been a sucker for Dream Eater. I love Dream Eater, even if it's tough to use sometimes. So yeah, Gengar is the second to last in my lineup.
Gengar's always dope. I usually had a Gengar or some, that was like, or a Haunter. Always had a ghost guy.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy that I would always have and he would never leave also usually would be a Gyarados.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Gyarados is one of the best.
Yeah. Didn't even matter if I had a Blastoise in my party. I always get a Gyarados too. I just, and you know what? And that was like my move mule a lot of times. Strength, Rock Smash, Dive, or not Dive, Surf. Had all the HMs ready to go. I loved Gyarados. That was my boy.
Yeah, no, Gyarados is great. Gyarados is also one of my final cuts. Also with Aerodactyl, Golem, and Starmie, they were also some of my final cuts. But the last member of my lineup and one of the best Pokemon, I still use it all the time when I get a chance, and that's Dragonite. And Dragonite, has one of the best moveset ranges in the game. It can learn Ice, Fire, Electric, obviously Dragon. Yes, it's very susceptible to Electric-type attacks because it's a Flying Dragon-type. So that could end up screwing you in the end. And Ice, too, because Ice is like four times as effective because it's Flying and Dragon. But Dragonite was so powerful and probably, you could argue, the strongest non-legendary Pokemon in the game.
Yeah. I think this, like, we were saying this the other day. Dragonite was underutilized in the game and in the show.
Yeah, I can only remember one time seeing Dragonite on the show, and it was like a fleeting appearance. It wasn't like a full episode.
Right. That's a fucking dragon.
Yeah, it's a dragon, and, like, dude.
It's cool. Like, yeah. Put it on. Like, show me more dragon stuff.
Yeah, it's dope. So who's rounding out your lineup?
Rounding out. Let's see. I'm trying to think of who, like, my favorite fucking... All right, I'd always go with a fighting guy at some point, and the fighting guy that I would always carry if I could would be Hitmonlee.
Mm.
Hitmonlee with a leg up.
Right, right.
Hitmonchan, he's aight, but Hitmonlee, badass.
You know what? I was actually more of a Hitmonchan guy myself.
Were you?
Yeah, and I think it was because his defense stats were higher. Yeah, because Hitmonlee had higher attack, and Hitmonchan had a higher defense stat. And I think that was always more helpful. I never really used either of them in the game very much, and it's maybe a bit of a tease for the next episode, but I always liked the third edition of that lineup more than the other two, even if it was kind of tough to evolve to that point. But that's my lineup. And the last question, Steve, we'll tie a bow on this episode. And the last question is, what Pokemon was your HM Mule?
My HM Mule had to be Gyarados.
Yeah.
Gyarados had Surf, Strength, Rock Smash. Was Rock Smash in that game? No.
Yeah, no, it was. It was in that game. I think you could learn it.
All right. So he did it in other games.
Yeah.
I wrote it down. He didn't have, in other games, he had Dive and Waterfall, too.
That's right. All those water moves. Very helpful.
Had water all day.
In my game, like, it varied for me. Obviously, you had to have a Pidgeotto in there or something that could handle the flying. Other than that, though, Machoke was pretty capable. Could learn Rock Smash, Strength. Sand Slash was a pretty good one.
Sand Slash was huge.
Anything in the Nidoking range, it could be Cut, Rock Smash, Strength, all that stuff. But the greatest thing was that you didn't have to worry about giving Surf to a Mule because Blastoise would just learn it, and it would be a very effective move for it.
That's right. Blastoise was always on the ball with that.
Oh, Blastoise is the shit, dude. I mean, if there's one thing... By the way, that's another Elite 2 commandment. Always have an HM Mule. You gotta have an HM Mule. You can't... Don't distribute it evenly. Don't do that shit. Get a Pokemon that can learn, like, three or four of these things and just keep them in your lineup for when you do.
Kill them off.
Yeah. just keep them in reserve and let them do the dirty work. But they're still a valuable part of the team. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But that's all I got for Generation 1, Steve. Anything else to add before we depart this episode?
Let me just check my notes real quick.
Sure. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Final thoughts. I only played this game ever on a Game Boy Advance.
Really?
Yeah, only on Game Boy
Advance. Interesting. I think I played it. I definitely played it on a Game Boy Color. I might have played it on original Game Boy, too. Definitely Game Boy Color. Played it on a Game Boy Advance, too, and I might have played it on an SP if it was compatible, if I remember correctly, but I don't remember
I played an SP, too.
Off the top, yes, I think it was SP. Oh, SP, I felt SP was one of those systems where it was like, it was around for like 45 seconds, and then no one ever talked about it again.
That's right.
It was it looked pretty cool, too. I'm not going to lie.
My sister had one, and it was so cool, and I wanted one.
Yeah.
But
SPs were the move. They were the move.
Yeah, they were the move.
But that's it. That's it for the first episode, Steve. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to the next seven generations or how many there are in Pokemon, honestly. So,
Thank you for having me. I'm glad that we could do this. And you know what? Hopefully, the world's still, turning.
Right. Steve, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Stephen O. Scott on Twitter or Small State Takes on Twitter.
That's right. And you can find me at Jacob_Morocco, and I am also at CSL Podcast on Twitter. You can go like, rate, subscribe to all that fun stuff. We're on all those podcast platforms, or at least we should be by this point. And we will talk to you in Generation 2. See you in Johto.